Log date, May 4th. Hi, my name is Akira. I'm 16 years old and I live in a little town in France. It's pretty small, a lot of scooters go by. It's overall pretty quiet. Forget it, this is stupid. Log date, May 10th. Okay, I've decided I'm going to try this again. Sylvia says it's going to help me get out my feelings, and I have a lot of complicated feelings at the moment, so I'll give it one more shot. None of them are very nice feelings, though. It's honestly my first time doing anything like this. Writing about, or I guess in this case talking about myself or my feelings, isn't my forte. But I'm going to do my best. Here we go. So, you're supposed to start a journal by telling a little bit about yourself. I'll start by telling you, or this journal, a little bit about me. I think the only way I can really explain everything is to start from the beginning, the very beginning. I know that some kids get told stories about before they were born by their parents, about if they kicked in their mother's belly, or about the songs their father would sing to them at night, months before they were born. I don't know any stories about when my mom was carrying me, but based on what I know about my parents, I've always pictured the time during my mother's pregnancy going something like this. First, a bit of background. I know that my mother was a photographer for a travel magazine. I don't know what my father did, but I remember him working from home a lot when I was little. What he did for a living isn't going to be super important to the story anyway. It was around spring, 1982, when my mother went away for a trip to Egypt. It was for a job, of course. She went there, stayed for a week, took pictures, maybe went on a few tours, saw the wonderful things the place had to offer. Then she came home. A month later, she found out she was carrying me. I assume they were overjoyed when they found out, like all parents are. They probably bought toys, painted a nursery, and set up a crib. Did all the things expecting parents usually do for their soon-to-be child. It was a time of joy for my family. Though there was not much love between my parents, trust me, I definitely know. My father firmly believed it was by some miracle my mother had made it home from her last business trip. My uncle always told me that. It hadn't been a good time to be traveling. The world was in its last few months of a period of terror, though it didn't know it yet. Lord Kronos was still very much a threat. He hunted the earth for blood and power, and Erevan and his band of crusaders had yet to find him. They couldn't even locate where on the globe he was. Overseas travel became especially rare in this time. Everyone was paranoid. Who knew if Kronos would be lurking on the other shore you flew to, waiting to slay you and drain your soul of its essence? During those uncertain months, people held their friends and family close, not allowing themselves to stray far from wherever they called home. But somehow, my mother had made it back unscathed. She would get to live into the peaceful era with her husband and her child. Kronos ended up falling just a month before I was born, and he had been found in Cairo, Egypt. My mother was extremely lucky to have made it out alive. I don't remember very much from when I was a baby, and I've never really been told about what I was like when I was a baby. I guess all babies are pretty similar, squirming little bundles of noise. I do remember some things from when I was a bit older, though. The first thing is when I began to grow in my hair. Most little toddlers don't really get that much hair, and I didn't either. That is, until I hit age 3. A little while after my birthday, I began to grow a large head of thick, bright golden blonde hair. It never really got in my eyes, but always grew quickly in the back and stuck out in all directions. My mother frequently had to brush and cut it. I think my father always found my hair color suspicious, as neither he nor my mother shared it. But his brother, my uncle, always insisted that I got it from him. However, that wasn't very believable. I remember his hair being a paler color, and it was always short and bristly. Mine was softer and longer. Every time my father would pass by the bathroom when my mom was brushing my hair, he'd shoot us both a glare. I'd see in the mirror. It was always disdainful, as if we'd betrayed him in some way. I don't think my parents ever really trusted each other. The second significant memory I have of my childhood is a family reunion, the first I can remember. I remember first being scared, all these unfamiliar people crowded into our living room, towering over me like mountains. A few of them actually tripped over me a few times, as I was so small they hardly noticed when I was in their path. But as people sat down, got their food, began talking and leaving the floor empty, I began to calm down a bit. My mother came over and knelt next to me to make sure I was all right. That's when I began to notice them. The first came out, I believe, from behind some large man's back. It was like a small dragon, and it looked like it came out of Chinese mythology. It slithered over his shoulder and began peering about, surveying the room. I just stared. I couldn't take my eyes off it. My mother noticed this quickly. "You see his guardian?" I peered at her, confused. "Guardian?" My mother gave a small laugh. "Yes, the little dragon on his shoulder?" I nodded. "Yeah, it's pretty." Pretty was the weakest possible word to describe it. The way its scales shimmered in the warm light of our living room was enchanting, and it had such a calm, curious expression. It was magical. "That's his guardian," she explained. "Everyone has one. You know the big fiery man who follows me around the house sometimes?" I nodded. "Yeah, Ember." "Well," she said, "Ember is my guardian. It's his job to protect me. He can also be really helpful." I nodded. "So he has one too?" My mother smiled. "Yes, and you eventually will have one too. When you're a bit older." A spark lit up in my chest. When I was bigger, I would get to have one of those wonderful beings. For the rest of the night, my mother took me around to meet different family members' guardians. Each one was so stunning in its own way, and no two were alike. My grandpa had something that looked like a little three-eyed dog with shiny fur that aggressively yipped and chased after my father's shoes whenever he passed by. Another woman had a green silhouette with plants growing all over its body. There was even one that was just a big, glowing bubble. No face, no nothing. Just a large orb bobbing over the arm of our rocking chair where its owner sat. Yet, it seemed to have a calming aura, and I always felt warm and peaceful whenever I was around it. I remember a lot of guardian-related things after that memory. The most standout one, though, is when I would sit on my blonde uncle's lap, and he'd play with me while chatting with my parents. One distinct thing he always used to say stands out in my mind. "When this little one hits 15, she's gonna get grandpa's. I'm sure of it." He had always hoped I would inherit my great-grandfather's guardian, a white serpent capable of creating warmth. Though it was a simple guardian, my uncle still loved the idea of me having it. He always seemed so happy when he talked about it. Most guardians have pretty mundane powers. For example, a guardian who can create fire would be a big help when starting a campfire or lighting a stove. If you have a guardian who can control water, you'd make a great firefighter and would be tons of fun at pool parties. Guardians with sharp tools can help build things, and guardians who are fighters can protect you on the street. But my parents considered none of these powers mundane. When they talked about the guardian I could get, they discussed it as if it was the most extraordinary thing in the world. When I was small, they made me feel like it was. Eventually, guardians blended into my normal life, as they do for every child. It's not like I stopped appreciating them, but they became normal for me, as ordinary as the people that passed by our home. My upbringing, other than what I mentioned before, was pretty smooth. Nothing really abnormal ever happened to me. That is, until my first day of kindergarten rolled around. That morning, my mother put me in my best little dress and brushed out my blonde hair. I was plopped in my car seat, and we drove a bit from the house to a little school building. It took a while for Mom to coax me out of the car. I wasn't too keen on this strange new place. When we entered the classroom, everything was in chaos. The kids sped around like dogs in a park. One boy was tackling his friend over near the window, and a chain of kids wove around the tables, laughing as they chased each other. As they reached the back corner of the room, the girl at the end tripped over a pile of blocks and started wailing. I clung to my mom's leg. I did not want to be a part of what was going on here. It took her and the teacher forever to get me to let go of her. My mom kissed me goodbye and headed out, leaving me alone in that hell house. After a bit, the teacher finally addressed the room and told us to sit down at our tables. The kids all bumbled over to take their seats. I went over to a table near a corner. No one else sat there with me. The morning's activity was coloring. I decided to draw a picture of my mom, as I was already wishing she'd come back and rescue me from this place. I had got out my crayons to start coloring when I felt a sharp pull from the back of my head. I looked behind me to see a little boy scampering back to his seat, snickering. I groaned and went back to my drawing. A few seconds later, I filled it again, and turned to see the same little boy scampering away. Why did he keep doing that? Sure enough, it happened yet again. The next time I turned around, I saw that his friends were beginning to laugh. I didn't understand. Why were they laughing? Why was it so funny to them to see the boy doing something that was hurting me? It wasn't funny. The boy did it once again, and I tried to hold down any reaction. Still, I could feel the tears stinging at my eyes. Why did my mom leave me in this awful place? When he pulled a fourth time, that was it. That was the last straw. I'd had enough of him and his taunting, this place, everything. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to be taunted and tormented. I didn't want to be in the middle of this chaos. I just wanted everything to stop. And it did. I let out a wail and a boom filled my ears. I sobbed for a few seconds, stuffing my face into my sleeve. Then I noticed everything had gone quiet. I looked up to see that everyone in the room had frozen. The kids were stone still, hunched over in their coloring positions. The teacher had stopped mid-step, her foot hovering slightly off the ground. I remember most distinctly seeing a pencil stuck in midair. Someone must have tossed it or something. But now it was frozen 3 feet above the ground. I felt something from behind me. It wasn't a sound or a touch that told me that there was something there. It was something that I can only describe as some kind of vibration in the air, combined with a warmth in my chest. I turned around to see a figure towering over me. He looked humanoid and had a very muscular frame. He was a lot taller than me. I'd estimate his height was around 7 feet. His skin was pure gold, and he wore a pointed mask over his eyes. A large hourglass was printed on his chest, sort of like a tattoo. Somehow, I wasn't scared of him at all. I got the feeling that he wasn't there to hurt me. I stared up into the figure's eyes. He gazed calmly back at me, then gave a gentle nod, as if to say, "Don't mind me, you keep going with what you're doing." I went back to my coloring. The figure watched me for a few minutes, which I wasn't bothered by, then floated over to the seat adjacent to me. He crossed his legs and sat down. I didn't know how the chair hadn't broken under him. He was so large. The figure then took a few crayons from the cup in the middle of the table, set out a piece of paper, and began to draw. We sat in silence, coloring together at that table, the world frozen around us. My distress slowly began to drift away. This being's presence gave the room a cozy feeling, a safe feeling. Eventually, I peered over at the figure's picture. It was a drawing of me, an extremely good one at that. It was almost photorealistic, from the texture of my hair to the shadow beneath my chin. Extremely impressive for something done with crayons. He noticed me watching and stared at me for a moment. Shyly, I picked up my own drawing and held it up to him. He stared for a moment, then gave a gentle nod. Somehow, without words, he gave a message to me. I can only describe it the way I described the feeling that let me know he was behind me. A vibration and a warmth in my chest. I like it. It's very beautiful. That's what he told me. We then went over to the block corner. I built myself a little tower, and the figure calmly sat and watched. Whenever I looked over at him, he just gave his calm nod. His gaze was warm and approving as he watched me complete my tower. But after a few minutes, I got bored of playing all alone. I looked up at him, and he seemed to understand. He knelt down on the floor with me and began building his own structure. I helped him out, and in a few minutes we had something that looked kind of like an Aztec pyramid. I didn't know why he had chosen to build it that way then, but I do now. We spent the rest of our time, or our frozen period, playing together in the classroom. The world stopped around us. I felt the same way a kid would in an amusement park, engulfed in joy and never wanting the day to end. But eventually, it had to. After a while at the restaurant playset, the figure floated up to me and looked down. The air became slightly somber around us. In his way, he gave me his message. "I have to go, but don't worry. I'll be back." I gave a nod. I didn't want him to leave just yet, but I could tell his message was sincere. I reached out to him, and he took my tiny hand in his large one. His touch tingled, kind of like static. He looked at me and told me one last thing. My name is Worldstopper. I'm here to protect you. I'll always come when you need me, but I must ask you not to tell anyone about me. Not a soul. The sharpness in the air made the seriousness of that statement clear. I nodded, and his gaze returned to gentleness. I felt a rush of relief in my chest, which I could tell was his own. Good. Then I bid you goodbye, child. That was the last thing he told me before disappearing into thin air. The classroom fell back into motion. I didn't particularly enjoy the rest of the day, but because of Worldstopper's intervention, I was able to tolerate it. When my mom picked me up and asked me how my day was, I told her it was okay. At least, that's what I remember. A part of me wanted to tell her about Worldstopper, the incredible being who had intervened in the worst of the morning, but I held back. Worldstopper's message had been dire and clear. I knew I couldn't disobey it. From that day on, Worldstopper began to consistently show up to me. Whenever I was being teased by other kids or just couldn't get through the rest of my day, he would show up, freezing everything around us. Then we would draw or play or whatever until I was smiling and laughing again. He became a constant companion to me. I pretty much considered him my only friend. After a few months, he began to show up after school as well. His aura was a bit more tense then. It was clear he was very nervous about being seen. I did my best to make sure no one noticed him whenever he came around. We had wonderful times. I remember one night, when we were hiding under the bed together from an imaginary monster I had made up, I asked him the secret of his power, how he made everything stop, then unfreeze as if nothing had ever happened. I remember his answer perfectly. I hold time still. Despite our secret, everything was good. I took walks with my parents in the evenings and played with Worldstopper during the day. Life was happy. Until, all of a sudden, it wasn't. It was a cool evening. Mom and Dad had gone out somewhere and left me with a babysitter. She had fallen asleep on the couch, and me and Worldstopper had gone out to play on the swing in the side yard. He had done his usual freeze of our surroundings. After a while of him pushing me on the swing, the world went back into motion. The thing about Worldstopper's ability was that he couldn't hold time still indefinitely. It's sort of like how you can only hold a plank for a certain period of time before your muscles give out. Worldstopper could only hold a time stop for a little while. I heard my parents pull up in our driveway. Worldstopper disappeared from my side as I headed in the back door. I heard the babysitter chatting with my parents from the living room. I wasn't sure about what. She sounded excited, though, so I knew it couldn't be bad. After she headed out, my mom and dad called me to the living room. I sat down on the footstool in front of them. Their expressions both seemed pretty natural, but from their small smiles, I could tell they were both concealing excitement. First, my mother spoke to me. "Akira, we were talking to your babysitter today, and she told us something very exciting." She gave my father a quick glance. He nodded. "She told us you had managed to summon yourself a guardian," he said. "A guardian?" As far as I knew, I hadn't done anything like that. My mother and father had always told me you had to be a lot older than I was to do it, at least 14. There's no way I possibly had one. "She said she saw you and him playing in the yard," my mother said. My chest clenched. Worldstopper. They must have meant Worldstopper. The babysitter must have seen him in the yard when she woke up. I shifted my feet nervously. No one was supposed to see him. Ever. My mom and dad shared a concerned look. They'd clearly picked up on the fact that I was uncomfortable. My mom gave me a smile that was meant to be reassuring. "It's all right, sweetheart. It's nothing to worry about. It's rare to get one this early, but it just means the two of you are probably really well connected." My father's eyes narrowed slightly. I think only I noticed. "So, would you like to show them to us?" Mom asked. I looked down at the ground. I had seen the look in my mother's eyes. She was proud of me, happy for me. She wanted to see Worldstopper and to be able to share him with me. I didn't want to reject her request, yet Worldstopper really didn't want to be seen by anyone else, and though I didn't know why, I could tell the reason was serious. "Maybe she doesn't know how to summon him yet. Most show up by themselves the first time," my dad said. I nodded. It was true I didn't know how to call Worldstopper. "It's simple," my mom said. All you have to do is call out the name. Slowly, I looked up. My heart was pounding, and I could feel the tears beginning to sting at my eyes. I wanted to show my parents. They wanted to see him. But he told me not to. I stood for a moment, panicking internally over my choices. Finally, I decided. These were my parents. They loved me. They would never want to hurt someone precious to me, ever. I could trust them with Worldstopper. What an idiot I was. Slowly, I raised my hands to my face and cupped them around my mouth. I yelled out at the top of my tiny lungs, Worldstopper! There was a harsh vibration behind me, and he appeared. The air immediately went still with his fear. He hadn't wanted to come. I looked at my parents. And the looks on their faces. My God. I'll never get them out of my mind. My mother was parchment pale, as if all the blood had suddenly just been drained out of her. Her eyes were wide in shock as she gaped at the figure in front of her. My father had a similar expression, except the heat was quick to rush back into his face. The disbelief in his eyes was quickly replaced by rage as he snapped his head toward my mother. Elizabeth, explain this! You know, it's not like that. No wonder you made it out of Cairo alive! There was a boom. My parents' faces froze, and I turned around. Worldstopper was gesturing toward the hall, firmly, desperately. I ran to my bedroom after him and buried myself beneath the covers. Worldstopper slipped under with me. We sat silently, with nothing but our terror to keep us company. Eventually, I heard another boom, and then my parents' screams. That was the shortest any time stop had ever felt. It was hours before I heard footsteps coming down the hall. Worldstopper disappeared from beneath the covers. I peered out as my mom opened my bedroom door. She came and sat on the bedside and gave me a gentle smile. Then she gave me news. I would be going away for a while. I asked her how long, but she only gave me the same answer. A while. I asked where. Her face sank, but she still answered. A nice place. I knew she was lying. That evening, big black cars parked outside our house. Men in black suits entered the living room. They dragged me out to one of their cars and shoved me in the back of it. My mother and father were brought out to say their last goodbyes. My mother just stared at me, eyes full of remorse. She said nothing. My father spoke, though. I'll never forget his last words. You monster. They were taken back inside. One of the men put a gag in my mouth. It hurt bad, and I tried to scream, but it only made me choke. The door shut, and they drove me off. I watched as my home disappeared in the distance. I looked back on this event a lot in my life. I used to think that these men were just going to imprison me somewhere, some high-security facility where I'd never again see the sun. But now, I'm pretty sure that wasn't the case, that I was just thinking optimistically. I believe they were going to kill me. Hey, thanks for listening to The Girl Who Could Stop Time. If you're interested in getting news and updates about our podcast, please consider subscribing to our socials at AkiraGWCST on Twitter and at The Girl Who Could Stop Time on Instagram. The voice of Akira was done by Kira Fleming. The script for this episode was written by Kira Fleming. Title theme, Uncertainty, was composed and performed by Timothy Fleming. Ending theme, Warmth, was composed and performed by Timothy Fleming. This episode was edited using Ferrite Recording Studio. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll tune in for Akira's next entry.